us to understand these words, help us to see the truth of them, and help us to appreciate that really none of us here have ever experienced what Jeremiah saw. We've never seen, in our country, a country ravaged by war. I know some have been in war, but not here in our country. And I do pray you'd help us to appreciate that and help us to be grateful for it. And then be able to read through this and see what Jeremiah actually witnessed and saw. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, the Lamentations of Jeremiah. Okay, this is the title. If you hold your finger here and go to Jeremiah 9, verse 1, often Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. And Lamentations is one of the reasons why he's called that. And then in Jeremiah chapter 9, you'll see that he mentions that, but when you tend to think, oh, he's the weeping prophet, then he's real compassionate in his speaking and all that stuff. But when you read through Jeremiah, he is out there. He's bombastic, calling conspiracy. He's standing in front of the Jewish temple, and as they're walking in a Jewish temple, he said, "You're going in to listen to a bunch of liars." And so they wouldn't consider him a weeping prophet at that time. But in Jeremiah 9, verse 1, he says, "Oh, that my head were waters and mine eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people." So that's often why Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. And then in Lamentations, you have five chapters where Jeremiah is lamenting about the destruction of Jerusalem. And he's describing what he sees. And then the Lord is taking what he's describing, and then the Lord is throwing in a few doctrinal ideas, because doctrinally he's describing what the Jews will experience in the tribulation time period. So he's writing historically, God is throwing in doctrine, and so that we could actually look back and see that God's warning with Israel. And remember that Israel is God's example to all nations. So as goes Israel, so goes all nations, depending on what they do. If they behave as Israel did when they obeyed God, then God's blessings will come in. If they disobeyed God's words, then, okay, that's just, it's going to go forward. Okay, so in Lamentations, that's what it's lamenting about the Jews' destruction and why they were destroyed as a people. It's better to try to prevent a problem rather than fix a problem after it's taken place. And so how could have they prevented this absolute destruction? Again, I doubt any of us would really have experienced this. One of Luke's violin teachers, he was Ravelli Grebe, and he remembers as a kid when the communists came in and took over Moldova. He remembers that. He remembers, or at least his parents told him about it, where the ones that they killed were the farmers. And then they took their land from them. And his parents, their grandparents were farmers, and they just came in and took the land from them and then conquered the country. Now, some people that are old enough that remember Germany going bad before Nazism or the Soviet Union turning toward communism, and then they came to America, they will say, "Man, we are seeing the same things in America that they experienced before this came into their country." And so Jeremiah is writing about that. So we have been, in our country, been greatly blessed by the Lord, and we can thank God for that. But all of that stems directly to the faith of the people at the foundation of this nation. Okay, the people, the common people. You know, I've been kicking around an idea of just doing like a whole service just on American history, the background of it, looking at the Christian side of it, because we're not taught true American history. You know, the so-called Revolutionary War really wasn't a revolution. There's a document that historians do not discuss that I'd read about this thing a while back, been trying to find more about it, and it's just hard to find it. But we've been given a wonderful heritage in our country. And if we don't realize where that came from, then we're not going to know how to continue the blessings of the Lord. Okay, remember that Babylon, okay, remember that Judah, this time, that's what he's writing about, Judah. So the nation of Israel, prior to the split, okay, the entire kingdom of David, if you do have a good reference Bible, in the back there is a map that you will not find in the reference Bibles in the Christian bookstores, okay, and this map shows the entire land grant that David had. Okay, it's much larger than people say. And the reason why the Bible publishers don't want to put the real map because it would upset Muslims. Okay, and so, but yet at the time of Judah, we're dealing with a very small section. So we're dealing with a much smaller section, what we commonly know to be the life of Christ Jesus in that map. So if we can imagine Israel at that time period, Israel with the 12 tribes, okay, after they'd lost some of that eastern portion after Solomon and everything, was about one-fourth the size of Indiana. Okay, so if you take one-fourth the size of Indiana, let's say draw a horizontal line right through Lafayette. And anything north of that would be the size of Israel, but of course you got to twist it, you know, a quarter turn for it's the lengthways. But then the 10 northern tribes are gone, and so all you got left is the two southern, Judah and Benjamin. So you're dealing with a size, say, South Bend, straight down, coming across maybe Rinseltuck. So we're dealing with a pretty small section of a land grant in that area. And so if we can imagine an army coming in and conquering that area, and then the first time they come in and conquer that area, they take 3,023 people to their foreign land. And then a few years later, they come back and do it again, and that time they take 832 people to their foreign land. That's the first time is when Daniel was taken. The second time is when Ezekiel was taken. Of that first time, 3,323, you see them at the end of Jeremiah is what I'm looking at. Jeremiah 52:28. Of that 3,023, we know the names of four of them. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Okay, that's the ones we know by name. Okay, the next one was 832 persons, and we know one name of those. That would be Ezekiel. And then the third time they came in, they took 745, so they took 4,600 in total, took them back to Babylon. Jeremiah chose to stay in Jerusalem. He had the opportunity of going back. They actually gave him the opportunity, and so that would have been 4,601, but he chose to stay, and then he chose to write about what he saw. And before the when the Babylonian army, what they did, if we can remember this, they surrounded Jerusalem. Okay, so they've got their whole army around Jerusalem, and they've got them staged in certain places. You know, just like how you can shut down I-65 just by putting a police officer at the entrance ramps. Okay, so they've got them staged out there. Nobody can come in, nobody can go out. So we obviously know what's going to happen. They're going to run out of food and water. If they had water supply in there, fine and dandy, but food, they're going to run out of. And so they were surrounded the city for 18 months. So 18 months is how much food stuff they had on hand as a city, and that's when things started falling apart. Okay, people were eating their children died, they turned around and eat them. Okay, and eating their, you know, everything they had, their, you know, dogs, cats, you know, cockroaches, you name it, they were eating it. It's like in China when you go up into the mountains, there's no wildlife, not like here. Those people ate it all because they were starving to death. And so when you go into the mountains of China, there's no deer, there's no elk, there's no groundhogs, there's no squirrels. It's just gone. And so if we can place ourselves in that setting, okay, and then it came in and just conquered the place, and then Jeremiah's writing about it. Now, not only that, remember that in the Jewish temple at that time, they had a box covered with gold, and that thing was worth billions of dollars. And these foreign countries on the outside wanted to get that bad because they thought it had magical power. And so that was there. And the last time we find that mentioned is Jeremiah, I think it's 15:3, I think it is. Is the last time it's mentioned. Nope, that's not the right passage. So, I have to remember that one. So, Jeremiah is the last one that mentions it, and the last thing that he mentions in it is the Ark of the Covenant. Probably 3:15. Now my... Nope, not that one either. Okay. So, that's the last time it's mentioned. So, it appears that Jeremiah, who was a friend with Josiah, Jeremiah's dad was a high priest or Jewish priest. So Jeremiah had access into the Jewish temple, and it appears that he took the Ark of the Covenant, table of showbread, the candlestick, and hid them in a cave system below in Jerusalem, because there's all sorts of caves down there. And he hid it down in there. And then when Babylon come in, when Nebuchadnezzar came in his army, you see that they'll take all the furniture and stuff, but nothing was mentioned about the Ark of the Covenant. And the reason why is Jeremiah hid it. Now, some folks think that either that Jeremiah possibly hid it, or there's a replica one that was sent down to Ethiopia or is sent down to Ethiopia. And who knows for sure? I would go with the story that Jeremiah hid it. And if Ron Wyatt is correct, if he is correct in his studies, that when he did the research and he did the archaeology and the excavating underneath of Golgotha, he claims that he found the Ark of the Covenant down there. And he claims also that there's a bloodstains on that, and the bloodstains were analyzed, and he said that one analyzed it, said it was animal blood. Another one analyzed it and said it was human blood. And then they said, the amazing thing is that human blood is still living. And that would have been the Lord's blood as it came down off the cross, down the crack, because there's an earthquake, and dripped down, covering Old Testament and New Testament. And then, of course, the blood of Christ is eternal, so then that covered the whole heavens. Okay, so Jeremiah is writing about this, the weeping prophet. And why did God destroy them? Okay, if you would go back to 2 Kings 17, and Jeremiah told them over and over and over again why, what was going to happen, and they didn't pay attention. 2 Kings chapter 17. Second Kings chapter 17, verse 15. And 2 Kings 17 is describing prior to the 10 northern tribes when they got conquered by Assyria. So you can read a lot of things before a nation gets destroyed before that. 2 Kings 17, 13. He says, yet the Lord testified against Israel. So God is testifying against them through his prophets. They're going out in the streets, tell them where they're wrong and why they're wrong and what's God going to do about it. And against Judah, by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all the law which I have commanded your fathers and which I sent to you by my servants the prophets. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks, like to the neck of their fathers, that they did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers, and his testimonies which he testified against them, and they followed vanity and became vain. Okay, they became vain. We're seeing that in our age. What's becoming vain? People think the world revolves around them. Oh, I think I'm a boy. I think I'm a girl. You know, who do I identify with today? Where now, I forget, somebody's telling me their driver's license, you don't have male or female on them anymore. Somebody's driver's license, and it's got to figure out which one you're going to identify with. And some of the birth certificates are not putting male or female. They're putting male, female, other, waiting for the child to decide which one they want to identify with. And that's just nuts. That's just crazy. People are just flat nuts. That's vanity. That's vain imaginations. And that's where they're turning to. Followed vanity, became vain, and went after the heathen that were round about them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. So that's 2 Kings. Now Jeremiah wrote it this way in chapter 23 of Jeremiah, verse 22. Okay, Jeremiah 23 and Matthew 23 are two of the meanest-spirited chapters in the Bible. And Jeremiah is just railing on the prophets of his day, the false prophets. And Jesus is railing upon the scribes and Pharisees in Matthew 23. But in Jeremiah 23, verse 22, he said this, "But if they had stood in my counsel and had caused my people to hear my words, then they should have turned them from their evil way and from the evil of their doings." So it goes right back to what God says. Now here's what Noah Webster said. You know the good old famous Webster Dictionary? And Noah Webster was a believer in Jesus Christ. And he made this statement: "The principles of all genuine liberty and of wise laws and administrations are to be drawn from the Bible and sustained by its authority. The man, therefore, who weakens or destroys the divine authority of that book," okay, "may be accessory to all the public disorders which society is doomed to suffer." That's quite a statement. And when he said that book, and that was about 1840 and 1850, the Protestants had won. And that's what he was referring to. So it all goes back to that blessed book. Okay, now, Lamentations. Okay, we'll start reading down through it, and we'll cover some of the doctrinal issues as we come to them. Which is right off the bat. Okay, so he's describing the suffering of Jerusalem. He says, "Why doth the city sit solitude?" Solitude, nobody. Streets are bare. Highways are unoccupied. Nobody's out. Why is this like this? Well, an army came in and destroyed it. People are hiding. Okay, doctrinally, Judges 5, verse 6. If you run some of the references that I do have in the center, many of those are doctrinal things. And many of the songs in the Bible are doctrinally aimed at the second coming, just like many of our songs in the hymn book are aimed to that. And this song in Judges 5, this song that by Deborah and Barak, or Barak, okay, is a song historically about that time, but it is also a song about the second coming. And what they say in verse 6 of chapter 5, in the lyrics of this song, you'll see in verse 5, well, man, back up and see. Let's hit some of the doctrine. Verse 4, "The Lord, when thou wentest out of Seir." Seir, that's Mount Sinai. Seir is Edom, Jordan, Mount Sinai. "When thou marched out of the field of Edom," okay, that's all second coming. "The earth trembled." That didn't happen back then. "The heavens dropped." The clouds also dropped water. "The mountains melted from before the Lord, second coming, even that Sinai from before the Lord God of Israel. The days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied. Nobody's in the streets. And the travelers walked through byways. Now, what's a highway reserved for during times of war? Why did Eisenhower create the interstate system? It's for the military. That's its primary function. They were amazed with how the Germans were able to move from place to place on the Autobahn, and they said, we got to be able to do that in our country. And that's where Eisenhower came up with that idea. And Eisenhower also warned America about the military-industrial complex. He saw that coming too in the late 50s, and that's where we're at. So the highways are unoccupied. The people sit solitude. If you would, go to Isaiah chapter 6. We kind of take our time going through this. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 9 and 10 are the most repeated or quoted verses in the New Testament. And it's a commission of Isaiah where God called Isaiah to do something. Isaiah, hear my, send me. And then he said, how long do you want me to preach? And he says, okay, I want you to preach until they won't listen to you. Chapter 6, verse 9 and 10, that verse is quoted in the first seven books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans. I'm sorry, first six books, and then Hebrews. So you got it seven times that verse is quoted. So how long? In verse 11, he says, then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, until the cities be wasted, without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate. Now that word desolate is uppercase D in Isaiah 62. And he's talking about Israel. That whole area where the Antichrist comes in and just obliterates everything. Okay, if you would, Isaiah 62, if you take time to look at that one, verse 4. So when we read these things, we can be pretty grateful to God for what we're living in this country. And we all express that gratitude to the Lord, thank Him for it. Isaiah 62, verse 4, for thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate. But thou shalt be called Hephzibah. That's a home over in Warsaw area. They've used that name. And thy land Beulah, for the Lord delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. So the forsaken and desolate will be tribulation. The Hephzibah Beulah would be millennium. And that's the promises. So it says in verse 1, how doth the city sit solitude that was full of people? How has she become a widow? She that was great among the nations, and the princess among the provinces, how is she become tributary? Okay, tributary or tribute. Okay, you have different terms that are similar, just like in anything. You have a tribute, a tax, or a custom. Okay, a custom, we use that when you come in an airplane from a foreign country. You got to go through customs. Okay, and there's often sometimes there, or if you buy a visa, that's like a customs fee. Okay, a tax. A tax is just governing authorities stealing from their people. Let's put it the way it is. Okay, a tribute. A tribute is when a government or country comes in and conquers another country, and they say, we're going to put you under tribute or we just wipe you out. So a tribute is a country paying to a foreign country the conquering fee to live. That's what a tribute is. And he's saying here in verse 1, Jerusalem has become tribute. A tribute to who? to Babylon. Now, the most deceived people in the world are people who think they're free, but they're enslaved. That's the most deceived people in the world. And remember, Jesus said in John 8, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And what did the Pharisees say after that? John 8, verse 34. I mean, how deluded and deceived these people were. John 8, 32. Jesus said, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And then they answered and said, "We be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man." What are you, crazy? You're under your fourth kingdom. Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, and now Rome. And you're saying you're not under bondage? Well, then don't pay the tribute and watch the Roman soldiers come in. You see? And so, "How sayest thou that ye shall be made free?" Jesus answered them, "Verily, verily, saying to you, whosoever committeth sin is servant of sin." Not only are you a servant under Rome, you're a servant to your own sin. But that's how people are. Okay? It's just like have a chicken in a pen, a bunch of chickens in your pen, and one gets out. What does it do? It runs around the pen, tries to get back in. It's now responsible for its safety. And they often lose their head if, an animal's available. And so the wise thing is, get back in where it's safe. Well, it'll go freedom. Yeah, but I guess you're safer there. You dumb bird. Okay, and so that's often how people are. When, people talk about in Germany when the wall came down, in the 1990s. Who changed? East Germany or West Germany? It was the West Germans that changed. They became more like East Germany. That's what they happened with that thing. You see, and it's not that the East Germans got all this liberty. Hardly anything changed. It's the West Germans gave it up through deception. And that's often what happens to a nation. It's either by deception or by force. Now, force, there's tricky ways of doing it. The tricky thing about being a tyrant is how can you be a tyrant over people without them knowing that you're the tyrant? Because people tend to assassinate a tyrant or dictator, so you got to figure it out how to do it thinking it's their idea. And the way they do it is through order out of chaos. They create chaos. And then the people said, "We want safety and order. Oh, we'll be the hero." Yeah, but who did all that? Well, we won't tell you that I did it, but we'll wait and we'll get a judge to seal the files for 50 years so you can't investigate Martin Luther King for 50 years to find out that the guy really was a communist. Or we'll go ahead and kill JFK, but maybe we'll let some people discover who did it actually 50 years later. Like, who's going to care? Who's going to care about it then? Well, it's all behind us. And governing authorities have done this time and time again. And the Lord's keeping track of it. So in verse 1, it says, "She become tributary." Verse 2, "She weepeth sore in the night. Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her." Now this lovers is in this spirit of Hollywood's term. Not in the Bible term. It's in a pervert term of somebody getting somebody out of something else. "Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. All her friends," use that term very loosely, "have dealt treacherously with her. They are become her enemies." They always have been their enemies. It's just that now it looks like that they were friends in the past when they're not. And that shows when things are falling apart. Okay, when things are falling apart, when a society has gone bad, you have federal agents or that rat on people everywhere. When I was in Vietnam, Mike Roberts had two or three police that were assigned to him. So everywhere he went, he had two or three at least two following him everywhere he went. And the Vietnam pastor he worked with, he had two assigned to him. So everywhere Mike and this pastor would go, they knew that it was a cat and mouse game with them. They didn't think anything of it because they knew that that Vietnam informant was poor as a dirt church mouse. And so they'd go in these restaurants and sit there and discuss their plans for about an hour and a half or 2 hours, eating in the air conditioning, enjoying their coffee. And they'd see the informant out there in the heat, 100 degrees weather. You know, he was just sweating it out. And then he'd go out a back door. And then a guy would call Mike's wife, "Where's Mike at?" "I don't know. You go find him." Then he'd find him. And one time Pastor Wei was complaining to a communist police officer. He said, "Man, you guys got two men assigned to me." And he said, "What's your problem? I got two assigned to me. They got police watching police." And it's kind of strange. And you think in the cities it would be more strict, and out in the mountains it would be more liberty. But it's the exact opposite. In the mountains, because they're so poor, everybody wants to be an informant. So one out of two people are an informant in the mountains. And in the cities, that's where they had more liberty, because you had so many people, you couldn't keep track of all of them. But you see, that's what's going on as far as watching them. Can you imagine being a boring life, just walking somebody around? What a drag. Wouldn't that be a drag? My job to watch this guy all day long? But that's what they're paid to do. Okay, and then it says in verse 3, Judah is gone into captivity because of affliction and because of great servitude. She dwelleth among the heathen. Okay, so the heathen, that's us, Gentiles. Okay, that's James 1, verse 1. They're scattered abroad throughout the world. She dwelleth among the heathen. That's Revelation 11, where it says that the Jewish temple is given to the Gentiles, and they're going to trot it underfoot for 42 months. And then it says, she findeth no rest. All her persecutors overtook her between the straits. Okay, between the straits is that they're running out, trying to get away from this. And in this context, the ones that's ratting them out are Muslim informants. Now, I know Muslims were back then, but doctrinally, that's what he's aiming at in the tribulation time period, where the Muslim informants will rat them out, and they'll say, "There's a Jew, get him," and then the peacekeeping troops will go get them. Now, Obadiah writes about that. Now, can you imagine that? One little book in the Old Testament, the smallest book in the Old Testament, writes about Edomites acting like, you know, after you got a tornado and you got people, looters coming in. That's what the Muslims are like when they rat out these Jews. When the peacekeeping troops come in and steal them in the middle of the night, then the Muslims come in the daytime and take everything out of the house. This is, let's see, right before Jonah, you got Obadiah. And he writes about this. And it's the Edomites. And the Edomites, that's the race foundation of the Muslims, Ishmael or Edom. And God writes a whole chapter about this, and he's so mad at Edom, and he said, "I'm just going to wipe you out. I'm sick of you. You're done. Your goose is cooked. Out of here." Now, he hasn't done it yet, but he's going to. Obadiah, verse 10. There's no chapters per se. He says this, "For thy violence against thy brother Jacob," Jacob and Esau, Edomites, "shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger, neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress." You know, what kind of people are like this? You know, they catch a Israeli soldier or an American soldier, in down there in Gaza Strip in that area, and then they kill him, mutilate his body, and then they bring their kids out and watch this. You know, what kind of people are like this? It's they're infested with devils and dragons. And he said in Malachi that Edom is a habitation of dragons. And that's why these people behave like that. They're infested. Their whole culture is infested with dragons. Okay, and so that's then verse 13 and 14 says the same thing. And then Obadiah, verse 15, he says, Day of the Lord, what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is verse 17, 18, he says, look at that. The house of Jacob shall be a fire, the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. He's going to torch them. He's going to use Israel to torch them. And can you imagine a political statement God said over and over and over in the Old Testament? The Holy One of Israel. Wouldn't that drive them nuts, the Ishmaelites? Well, what do you mean, Holy One of Israel? It's Holy One of Ishmael. No, it's Israel. God said it over and over. It's not the Holy One of Esau. And that's every time that's said by those guys, that's a political statement. And the Lord is just rubbing it in their face. And they have it coming to them. Okay, so Lamentations 1, verse 3. Verse 4, the ways of Zion do mourn because none come to the solemn feast. Okay, that's the Jewish feast. All her gates are desolate. The gates is where they do their business and their political are desolate. I've covered the word desolate. Her priests sigh. Her virgins are afflicted and she is in bitterness. Now, her virgins, doctrinally, who are they talking about? Well, you've got Matthew 25, 10 virgins. That'll get some light there. And then you've got Revelation 7 and 14. Revelation 14, you've got 144,000 Jewish men that were virgins. And that's the place you can run for that answer to help that one. Her virgins are afflicted and she is in bitterness. Okay, we'll stop at verse 4. Come back to them virgins. Cover that another time. Any questions or comments? Are we covered?